builds a boat, and I's the guy that sails her. I's the guy that catches a fish and takes them home to Lizer.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Boat Talk here on Community Radio, WERU-FM Blue Hill, and at WERU.org. I'm Alan Sprague, joined here by co-host John Hansen for Boat Talk. John Johansson. I'll learn one of these years.
Oh, don't worry about
it. Boat Talk is a call-in show. Right after John gives his boatyard report, we'll open up the phone lines for anybody who'd like to discuss anything naval or any questions on boat repair or whatever. We'll pretend we know what we're talking about and try to help you out. But first, we're going to go to John and what's happening up and down the coast.
Oh, there's plenty going up and down the coast. As you know, it is the season.
It's racing season, too.
Well, it's racing season, but the boatyards, and you've worked in how many?
I'd have to count on my fingers, probably half a dozen at least anyway.
Right, and what's the spring like?
Yeah.
And what you pray for is cold weather and rain?
Yeah,
because that way the boat owner doesn't really want his boat, but if it's warm and nice like it has been, the calls come in. And,
Yeah, if they're down south, they show up early thinking it's going to be warm here too.
Right, yeah. And we're still pushing ice away from the slipways. Anyways, I've been up and down the coast as usual. I think I looked at my speedometer the other day on the new truck I bought, I think the early part of November, and I've got 30,000 miles on
it. Wow.
So I don't want to know. I think it's 8 months.
So that's like every 2 years you're going to have to get a new truck.
No, I wait till about 6 years, and then I've already got about 300,000 on them.
Wow.
So, but anyways. Yeah. But this one's nice because it's got a diesel, and I get over 30 miles to the gallon, and I only have to fill up about every 700 miles.
Huh.
So that's been nice. Diesel's I don't have to go to the gas station as much. It still costs as much because it's diesel. But anyways. Yeah. So getting up and down the coast, one place I love stopping into is I go see Rob Blood at Rob Blood Boat Works. And most of you would know the place because if you go up and down Route 1 and you come through Newcastle, he's the building on the left. It says Newcastle Marine right on the building. And if you look real close, it's on the west side headed north. And if you look real close, he does a lot of wood. And in there, he just launched his boat, which is outward bound. She's probably on her way to Castine or is already there. I think that's, no, they keep it in Stockton Springs. And she's a little schooner, and he didn't have to do much to her this year. He said mostly they refinished the mast, stripped all the varnish off of it, and then recanvassed her cabin house. And then he said that he painted her, and I asked her what he used, because that's always a nice contention, because all these painters, everyone's almost different, you know? They bounce around through, Interlux had Brightside, but then they stopped making that. So a lot of the painters now are scrambling to try to figure out where they want to go. I liked Epiphanes. That seemed to work really good on the top side of the big boat. He does Epiphanes. Because usually what he does is he has paint left over from some customer's boat, and that's what his color is for the year. So kind of like that shoe salesman. But anyways, and then I asked him about Kirby paint. Alan, have you ever used Kirby?
I have not.
Because oil-based paint,
right,
made in New Bedford. I actually went through the company, which got moved off the waterfront when they had urban renewal in New Bedford in the early 70s, and they moved them to a dairy farm a little further out in town. But it's still oil-based, and it's, you know, should be good for wooden boats, but, you know, it's not carried by anybody up here,
right,
which is too bad. But
are they one of the few that still make red lead?
You got it, because I got 2 gallons of it.
Yeah, that's getting to be scarce now, too.
Yeah, and I guess you can't mail it, so they can't ship it. Because it's got lead in it,
huh,
which doesn't, I don't understand that. It's in a can and stuff. But anyways, so then we looked at the projects he was doing. At the time, basically, he was moving out a lot of the plastic go-fast, you know, center console boats, because he stores about 60 boats. The former owner stored 35 to 40. He's got it up to 67 to 70, and he wants to be around 90 because he says basically they pay the bills for the yard. the storage customers.
Yeah, and they all want to launch in the same week.
Yeah, and pretty much there's not much to do to them. You know, start them up, make sure that the batteries are okay, go through the engine, that sort of stuff,
yep.
And then throw a coat of paint on the bottom, maybe, if it needs it. But anyway, so he had Monica in there. She's a 36-foot Rhodes Whistler. And he did a lot of work to her. He did some stem work. He stripped her mast and revarnished that, took all the hardware off. He launched her that morning that I was there, and she's gone. And then Saraban, she's a 37 to 38-foot double-ended Sparkman and Steven design. And he put new bolts in the stern post and horn timber and did about 10 to 12 new planks, new rudder hardware, a new rudder post, and now he's putting in the through hulls, and she should be going in by the end of the month. The other boat that he was pretty impressed with the construction, because, you know, lobster boats in Maine back especially in the 40s, 50s, they were pretty quickly built. And this is a Hodgdon boat, and he says he was impressed with the construction of the Hodgdon. It's probably a 27 or 28 runabout that Sonny did a number of them. And he worked on the deadwood, mostly around the stern post and skeg. And then he actually then went up in and replaced the whole platform. And she's pretty close to being done. She needs some paint before she goes over. And that, he said, would also be by the end of the month. And then he has a Concordia inside. Well, the owner of the Concordia put that project on hold because something happened to his bigger boat. Do you remember the 50-foot Apogees that Abel built? They were a Chuck Payne design.
Apogee, yes, yeah. I remember that. Yeah, yeah, sort of a big, race kind of boat.
Yeah, but cruisers, right? They were pretty, with a doghouse. Didn't they have a doghouse?
I can't remember.
I can't remember a handful of them. Five or six, seven, or any, anyways. But anyways, I get somehow she got a lot of water damage. He didn't elaborate, and I don't know if I just didn't ask the right questions or he didn't want to tell me. So they had to replace all the wiring. Anything that was damaged below had to all be replaced, and it was a big job. The problem was the boat was in Kittery, and of course he's in Newcastle, so they did a lot of the work down there. But he's hopeful that the guy will go back because the Concordia that he's doing is, I believe, is a 39, and she's a total rebuild. And basically it started in Missouri, and then they trucked it here, just bones. They just had the frame set up inside her, and they trucked it here. So that must have looked pretty good on the truck coming this
week. Bunch of bones.
Yeah, you know. And people probably wonder what that is. But anyway, so... he's hopefully that they're going to start that project again, either this fall or this summer. Let's see. Then we went to Custom Composite Technology, and it's an interesting place, pretty high tech. Loves to use a lot of carbon, vacuum bagging, that sort of stuff. And his sons, like a lot of us, were aging out of our jobs. And Steve Hassett, who went to the boat school with Richard Stanley, that was a class with Peter Buxton, Scott Edgley, who we were talking about before. That was an incredible class down there. I think 81, 82, I think, is when they were there.
It must have been.
But Steve has actually got his son in there, and he's kind of taken over the projects. And their big thing right now is that they're doing basically deck windshield for the Hinckley company. They're doing four models from 37 to 57. And those are coming in. And what he said, which was kind of interesting, is that finish level is, of course, like shine cells. You know, so the better the shine, the more it's going to sell.
Oh, okay, I was thinking C-E-L-L-S. No, shine cells, but no, S-C-E-L-L.
Yep.
Yeah, I got you.
And, of course, you know how they finish off those Hinckleys. They're pretty shiny.
Oh, yes, that's for sure.
So then he has been doing some work for Rockport Marine. They have a 95-footer in there that they're building at Rockport Marine, and he's been doing parts and pieces for that. Now, mostly what he did is he did bulkheads because he has a big layup table, so they can do 8x8 or 8x16 sheets. Mm-hmm. And build panels for, you know, big boats like this. And then he actually did the web framing in the bilge. So they did like the longitudinals and then the cross members across that. And all, of course, it's all high tech and all vacuum bagged together. And that project is almost done there, but they also think there's more pieces coming that are going to need to be done in that boat. And I think right now he's actually quoting parts and pieces for that. They did some work for Moore Brothers, which was on a Regent project. And what they did was, it was 55 feet long and it was 5 feet wide, but they didn't need it 55 feet long, but so they just cut whatever they needed for the project. Hmm. So it, which just makes it easy, you know, to do. And then he's been playing around, and I knew I could, what questions sometimes to ask. And he's, every once in a while, he does a car project, and it's because they want something very, very light because it's a race car. And this one's for BMW, and it's called the VS1 project. And he didn't do the hood. I think the hood was already there in some of the other parts, but he's been doing some of the parts that they can't just buy off the shelf. And so it's all custom built and all very high tech. And
for their race cars?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you need carbon for the race cars, you know.
Yeah, they're very expensive, and then you see them race and bump into another car, and it goes into a million pieces.
Yeah, and then you get to build it again.
Yep, do it all over.
Yeah. Now, Gamage Shipyard, it has finally been announced that it was sold. The rumor's been floating around the coast for about 4 or 5 months, ever since the first of the year. And it's been bought by Maine Yacht Center. Now, that owner actually has a place just up the Damariscotta River, just above Gamage Shipyard. And so it'll be interesting to see what changes he institutes.
Is that Finn Sprague?
No. Maine Yacht Center is the one that was behind the B&M Baked Bean Factory.
Oh, right, right. Yep.
That's now becoming some sort of a research center for a university. Hmm. Which is unfortunate because I'd rather have the B&M baked beans at the research center. But
oh, you're an old fart.
Yeah, I know. But the guy that runs Maine Yacht Center is very interesting, Brian Harris. He went through the landing school. He worked at Rumry's Boatyard, but he's been at the Gamage at Maine Yacht Center for years. But he also went to France and learned how to set up race boats for like the Vendée Globe. He did Rich Wilson's Vendée Globe too, so it'd probably be 6-7 years ago. American, what was it?
American Eagle? Oh, no.
No, wasn't that? That was an America's Cup boat. And then there was American Promise, but that was Dodge Morgan's boat. But anyways, it was Rich Wilson's boat, and Rich is out of Marblehead, I believe, or somewhere on the North Shore, Cape Ann. But anyways, it's going to be interesting to see what transposes there, because if you go to Maine Yacht Center, they do it right. You know, everything is just so, they've got beautiful docks, and if you look, they've actually got special docks, because they got attenuators, which is supposed to stop wave action. Whoa. Because 1 year they got really damaged. It was the first or second year they were in business, and they damaged a lot of boats. And it was all because the storm came out of the kind of the northeast, and it came right down the bay, Casco Bay, and right into their dock space. So and then we went to Jeremy Beals in Jonesport. That's Wayne Beals' son, and he lists himself as Jeremy Beals / Wayne Beals Boat. And he had my turn sitting halfway in the building. Well, that's the old Miss Marina, which was Wayne Beals' actual lobster boat. He's given that boat up, and Jeremy bought it this winter, and he's going to let his daughter take it fishing. She's going to try her hand at fishing. She just graduated from high school. So that's a 36-foot Wayne Beal, hard chine, with a 500-horsepower Cummins in it. So she'll be at the races. They changed the color. I can't remember. I think it was a light green that he used. Well, now it's purple. So I'm sure that Wayne wouldn't have liked that. Wayne has actually opted to go and fish out of a 23-footer that he built back in the 80s, late 80s, when he did the plug for the 23. So, and that should be finished and ready to go before season starts, which down there is probably the end of this month. Little Brev, which is a Willis Beal, 30, no, I think she's actually bigger than that. She's 40. That's one of Killer Smith's boats. She was in to have a new top, and Jeremy thought that he had did it backwards because they put the shelter on, and he modified a top from a 36. But next year they're going to do the trunk. Jeremy thought that they should do the trunk first and then put the shelter up.
Yeah.
That would have made more sense. And then last fall they lost a boat. I didn't lose it. But she sank. She had an open stern, and they had too many traps on it. And for whatever reason, she sank. But there was enough air in the bow to keep her up. So she's in the shop. It's a Calvin 38, I believe. It may be a 36. But anyway, she's in the shop, and she's being redone. And she should be out and ready within another month or two. And then they have a 38 South Shore that's coming in. And that's been sitting for 20 years. So they're going to put a Wainbeel top on that one, a 40-footer top on it, and fix her back up so that, you know, because sitting for 20 years, you can imagine what she looks like, you know, moss here and moss there, you know, because she hasn't been in the water at all.
Yeah.
And then there's another 36-footer to do, backed up with another 42 that needs to be done. And then, let's see, Thunderbolt. I think we mentioned last time that Thunderbolt, the unfortunate thing is that the owner, Bruce Ingert Sr., passed away probably a month and a half ago now. He was from Booth Bay, and we've never really seen this boat go because there was always a mishap with something breaking in the engine or whatever. And they brought it out a couple years ago, and she got off the dock only once. And then she broke about 100 yards down the course. So this time it had been repainted, looked good, and we're hoping that his son will bring it out, but Jeremy wasn't very hopeful. But we can talk more about that when we hit lobster boat races. Then I went into Paul Rollins' shop, and Paul is a very interesting character. He learned boat building from Bud McIntosh because Bud didn't want to build boats anymore. He wanted to do design work. So he kind of schooled Paul into building so he didn't have to. And he always told Paul, if you get to a place that you don't know what to do, call me, I'll come down and help. And so he is, you know, a really interesting guy to actually sit down and talk with. I did a couple interviews, especially on Bud McIntosh, because I've only met him a couple times, but never got to interview him. Well, he's got an interesting project in there. It's called an E-Sail 25. That was actually designed by Elliot Spalding, who worked for Royal Lowell. And then when Royal passed away in 1984, he continued designing. And this boat was from 1994. She's 25 foot, but she's actually a motor sailor. And so she's made for cruising long distance. And she's been at a couple of shops, mostly in the Midcoast area. And the owner, who's in his well in his 90s, has some health issues. And he's trying to find somebody to buy the project, which I think is going to be a hard sell. I mean, it's a cute boat, nice idea, but, you know, how much is somebody going to pay for a 25-foot boat?
A big project.
Right. So right now, Paul's putting in, he's completing the systems, he's doing the wiring, he's finishing the engine installation, he's putting in the seacocks, the electronics, and the chain plates. And then they're hoping to have this boat buttoned up and put in the water sometime this summer. And hopefully they find somebody to come through and pick up the project from him. I'm not sure how easy that's going to be. Now, Paul has a boat, and I can't remember, but I do know that Bud McIntosh built the boat. It was a sailboat. And one of them was really fast and actually went racing and did very, very well in the racing circuit. But this boat that Paul has was in the back of Wooden Boat Magazine. Maynard Bray always has a Save a Classic. Well, Paul saw one of Bud's boats in the Save a Classics thing, went up there, and guess what? He owned the boat. And over 2 years, I think he totally rebuilt whatever needed to be done, and the boat's beautiful.
Yeah. I'm glad Maynard's doing that.
Oh, yeah. He's got a long list of boats that need to be saved, I hear. I can't remember. I was talking with somebody that he's on the list.
Yeah.
Oh, I know. It was Rob Blood, because he's got a Sparkman and Stevens boat there that he's hoping that somebody will come in and try to save her. She's a beautiful sailboat. But it's good. It's a big project.
That's what they are.
Oh, yeah. They're not free. So anyway, so he's getting pushed and pulled because he'd really like to put the boat in the water. The wife says, no, you got this honey-do list and you need to get this done and that done. We don't have a lot of money. You really can't do it. But his friend says, why are you going to let that boat go to, you know, be a problem, you know? And so he's kind of torn between it. He says, and then his son thinks that he needs to change the tiller out and put an Edson worm wheel in. And so he's actually probably will get it in the water, but it probably won't be right away. Now, there's been a couple of boat launches in the last week, and Stuart Workman at SW Boatworks launched a boat that he has wanted to build for 40 years. He's wanted to build a lobster boat just for himself, and he also said that at his age, he's just over 60, that he needed a retirement plan. And he was one day at his he's got another place on Gouldsboro Bay or someplace. Yeah, Gouldsboro Bay. And he was sitting there eating lobsters with his wife, and he thought that it was kind of dumb that he's eating lobsters when he could actually catch them. He does have a license, mm-hmm. and he always had one ever since he was a kid. So, and his wife turned around and told him, I don't think that you need another job. So
go get supper.
Well, so but basically he's retiring out of the boat building business. He's only going to finish lay up hulls. He may finish off a boat here and there, and may take it a little above, you know, basically a kit boat. Yeah. But anyways, this boat, he started fishing, I don't know, it's been a while, maybe 10 years. And he had Michael Porter, who was a designer down on Chibig Island off of Portland. He had a 26-foot wooden boat that Stuart had picked up. And he fished that for a couple of years until he almost rolled it over. It was round bottom. It wasn't really meant for lobster fishing. And he had put too many traps on it, and he almost paid for it.
Yeah,
So then he picked up a 34 Calvin that he had built. But was finished off by Calvin Beale, but that's Calvin Beale Jr.'s son. And so he loved the boat. It was a simple layout. It was finished the way he wanted it. But last summer, somebody called up from the West Coast that wanted a 34. And he says, well, I've got one, but it'll take me 3 days to clean it. And the guy on the West Coast goes, well, why is it going to take you 3 days? He says, this bait, he says, and as soon as your wife steps on, she ain't going to want this boat. So he cleaned it up. They loved the boat. They bought the boat, and now he was boatless. So now he's forced into building a boat. And the argument was, do I build a 34, which is what he wanted to do. He wanted to stay with what he had. He felt very comfortable in it. He loved the boat.
Well, he got all the patterns and everything, too.
Right, but he had the patents for the 36, too.
Oh, okay.
So he jumped to a 36, and he's happy he did. So it's a simple boat. It's got a full berth forward. It's not a V berth. It's right straight across. But he added a shelf so he could put a Keurig and a microwave, just in case the wife will come. And he says that sometimes out there fishing in the cold weather, soup and coffee is nice. Mm-hmm. So he's done that. There's nothing under the deck. He put nothing under the platform. There's no fish hole, nothing. Hatches to get down and service the engine. Plus, the bulkhead's open so you can service the front of the engine very easily. You know, he made it so that it was, and it's nicely set up, nicely finished. He did this boat in 10 weeks.
Whoa.
But you have to remember, he and Gleason, and I don't know Gleason's last name, but they worked on this almost all day long. They only went home for maybe 4 to 6 hours. And, so basically, I think you're looking at a 20-week boat. Hmm. You know, if you really took the hours that they had put into it, it would work out to that. She's powered, and he likes two different types of motors. She's powered with a QSL 9, 450 horsepower with a twin-disc 2-to-1 ratio. And he also liked the other engine that he had, which was an older model, but he's very, very happy with this one. And when she went in the water, because this one has more torque, he didn't think it was actually going to turn up enough RPMs because he thought the engine was underwheeled. But it, when they put it in the water and he had warmed her up, it worked out perfectly. And what's interesting is at 1,900 RPM, he's doing, he's cruising at 19 knots. Ooh. And only burning 16 gallons of fuel.
Wow, she's slipping right through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's a very slippery boat.
Yeah.
He holds 230 gallons of diesel fuel. And those tanks were made at Esposito before it changed hands. Then he's got a 42-foot sport fish that he just put over, which is at, I think it's up at Abel's in Somme Sound. I think they're just waiting for final sea trials and some woodwork to be finished, and then the owner to accept it, and she's off. Then Whiskey Business, for those that have listened to the rumor mill, that was a boat that was at a boatyard down around Brunswick, and she caught fire because of an air conditioning unit. And did a lot of damage in the house.
She was in the races quite a bit.
Wasn't no, that we've had one whiskey girl.
Okay,
but this one was a beautiful yacht that he built for a guy that's off of Harpswell, and but the boat and Stuart and a surveyor have gone on the boat, went through the whole boat, and the boat has solid bones, just damaged in the salon and mostly on the way up. And it's very easily fixed. Of course, it's going to be a nasty job because grinding fiberglass isn't a fun thing, is it? You itch for a week. So anyway, so that's coming up, and it's going to be totally redone. Then he's got a bunch of 36s, and three of them are going to Massachusetts. He's got another one going to Cutler, and I know that's being finished off for a fisherman there by Little River Boat Shop, and that won't be started until next year. Ah, then on Saturday, if you happen to be on my Facebook page, you saw a little clip of a boat launching at John's Bay Boat Company, and I think she's a 47-footer that was finished off for a customer from Friendship. Absolutely gorgeous. It's a yacht. It was fully appointed down below in the cabin, in the cockpit. In the cockpit, they had a rounded seating at the transom. In the shelter, there was a beautiful helm station all done in mahogany. The galley was simple, but all done in mahogany. A couple of settees. Down below was a forward stateroom and a guest berth to the port side and head and shower on the starboard side. Mm. And she got launched. She's called Vigilant. That's the newest one. He's got one more yacht to do. And then his wife told me that the next one is his boat and it's his last one. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how true that is, because I doubted, you know, because a lot of these guys can't quit.
Are any of these pictures in the Maine Coastal News?
Not yet, but they will be after the lobster boat races this weekend.
Uh-huh.
And but they are up on Facebook. I shot some out yesterday.
Is under John Johansson?
Yep, under John Johansson.
Yep. No H in John.
Nope. And the video, we put it up about right after the launch, but of course they don't have service, so it may have been around 2 o'clock. And by 8 o'clock that night, 2,200 people had seen the video.
Yep.
So, and it's the old way. I mean, it's in a cradle, and all of a sudden he just releases it. And
it slides right down. There you go.
Yep. It's on a rail car.
Yep.
So, let's see. Now, lobster boat racing, we start this weekend. We are going to start in Booth Bay on Saturday. The best place to see that, if you can't get out on a boat, you go over to, what is it called? It was the main department where they did research. Bigelow Lab.
Bigelow Labs.
Right. That's a good place to see it because we race right up that side of the harbor. Hmm. And then the next day, the real easy way to see these races is come and just stand on the jetty at Rockland, because we'll be there on Sunday. There's not much rumors going around, as I told you about Thunderbolt. Little Girl is supposed to probably not be ready for this weekend, but probably will be ready for either Bass Harbor, which is the next weekend, or the following weekend, which is Jonesport, which is really called Moosebeck. And the other one is Black Diamond. We don't know what she put in. The rumor is that he's got a 2,000 horsepower alcohol 2, power.
2,000.
Yeah. Don't you want one?
Right.
But again, the favorite boat of the year is going to be Maria's Nightmare, which is Jeremy Beal's boat with that 1,300 horsepower Izotta.
Yeah.
And we don't think, and we're pretty confident that Glenn Crawford and Cameron Crawford, who own Wild Wild West, will not be out this year because Glenn hasn't had time to do what he wants to do to the boat. He wants to go back in and stiffen up some of the structures and paint her up and make her look a little better, because I don't think he's done anything to that boat for at least 20 years. Mm. You know, and it's I don't know how old it is, because it came out, I think, in the late 90s. You know, yeah. But it's been a real good boat. And
I asked him about the background of that boat. I thought perhaps it might have been a Hinckley, the little old Hinckley boats that they used to use for mine, what do they call them? Mine watchers. Or something. Mm-hmm. You know, they look similar to that the boat that Glenn has. But he said no. He said pretty sure it wasn't a Hinckley, but he didn't really know the background of it either.
Well, there's always been an argument because James West is the one that pulled it out. And supposedly it was at the head of MDI somewhere sitting. Mm-hmm. And they didn't know where it came from. But that was always one of the question marks. Was it a Hinckley?
Yeah.
And because he took he basically laid up a hull over the outside of one, I think, is what he did. Because it was pretty rough, the first one. It was called High Hopes and Empty Pockets, which came out in the mid-90s. But they've always raced well. They set down, and, you know, they don't have the rocker to bring that bow up. They basically just sit and go.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I think it's actually a little bit more aquadynamic to be more or less parallel to the waterline rather than have your bow up in the air where you're,
and dragging
dragging the back end.
Yeah. And the only other thing is that if you're really bored tonight, I am going to be speaking at Millbridge, and I believe it's at the Historical Society's building right in the center of town. I'm talking on Millbridge Shipbuilding. So if you really want to go to sleep, I call it the Insomnia series.
No. But a quick preview of the Millbridge. When did it start?
1845.
So it goes back a ways.
And they built quite a few ships.
Yeah.
But they're not number one, because that's Bath. And I got 1,200 pages of notes just on Bath ships. And that's just touching the surface.
That's a long lecture.
Yeah, that one would be. But Millbridge had some real interesting, but what I couldn't do, and I wish I could have done, is gone in and find where the ships went. You know, I kind of have an understanding of the trades that were around the world, but I don't know where their ships actually went. And that would take a lot of research by going into newspapers.
Yeah.
And there was a Cherryfield paper, and there are copies of it available. So I'm hoping that at some point I could get in and do some research to see what their ports of calls were.
Boy.
But, you know,
that's
the captain.
A lot of searching through to find.
Oh, yeah. There was some of it was in the Industrial Journal, but that was only on the shipbuilding itself. Hmm. So I'm going
to. The lecture is at 7 o'clock?
7 o'clock.
At the Millbridge Historical
Society. And then I'm headed to Jonesport.
And then, oh, yes, yeah, down to your marina.
Yeah. We've got one boat in, the Susie K. I believe she's a 28 Wayne Beal. We've put a new top on her and a new after deck. And then next to come in is going to be Tatiana, which is one of Willis Beal's torpedo stern boats. Mm. And we're refastening her, the project manager, Willis Beal himself. And then
he won't screw up.
Oh, no. And he'll make sure we don't either. And then we made Isaac Beal, who was a boat builder. He's the oldest boat builder. He's 83. Mm. He had retired his boat 16 years ago and put it on a trailer and kind of slid it out back with the hopes of, as we all do, of getting to it someday. Yeah. Well, we took our telelift over there and dragged it out of the woods and dragged it over to the boat yard and slid him into Bert Frostall's shop. And he's been there almost any day he can be. And he's refastened it from the bow to the bulkhead.
So the wood is still mostly good. It's just
He says the hauling side, he's going to have to do some planking. Uh-huh. But what's nice is he's also teaching the crew. Uh-huh. But you should have heard the language when he found that the raccoons had thought that the bow was a hotel.
Yeah, they can do a lot of damage.
Yep, and they did. But so he doesn't have a lot of life preservers and cushions left.
And they make a smell, too.
Yeah, I bet.
Well, so that's it for the Boatyard Report. Oh, if you would like to join the conversation, our number in the Boat Talk is 207-618-8819. That's 207-618-8819. And I also have my little laptop here, too, if you'd like to email from anywhere. You can email us at boattalk@gmail.com, and if I see it, we'll get it on. But that'll be pretty good report for the Boatyard Report today. A little bit over half an hour, like you say. There's a lot going on,
and you know you're only touching 5 yards here. You know, and look at Brooklyn Boatyard. They're getting that 55 wheeler. I've been amazed every time I go in there. You can see progress. And she is now in the paint shop, and she's supposed to be launched the end of this month and delivered in July sometime. And then they've got another one to build right behind it, and they've got a 56-foot sailboat to do.
To make or
yeah,
repair?
Yeah, they got to build it.
Ooh, yeah.
But it's amazing to watch, and they've got a lot of young people there, and people who have been there 40 years.
Yeah.
You know, it's pretty amazing to see the retention that they have.
Well, yeah, it's good to have the experienced guys there to explain what happens and what order they have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a variety of pre-recorded Boat Talk little sessions from various topics here that we can talk about. I'm not sure just what to talk about. Let me give you a list and we'll pick one. One of them is sailboat salvage from a boat that hit the rocks, a story of salvaging that boat. We got wheel sea. Remember about three, 4 months ago, a fellow called up and wanted to know what the result of this boat called wheel sea was. Actually a amphibious conversion of a school bus.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that one? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got the original story of that we can play. It's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
A woman talking about getting shingles in the middle of the ocean.
That ain't good.
That is, yeah. Yeah, fortunately she did all right. She was a nurse and was able to tough it out. But boy, that's a bad timing there. And Michael Warr, we've got him in a couple of different discussions about teak decks.
Mm-hmm.
Or any kind of deck needs to be recovered. You know, I guess some decks, a lot of decks had originally painted canvas covers, which wore out. And so it was a nice discussion of recovering decks. And we could talk about John Lennon. Have you heard about the story about John Lennon?
Yeah, I can't remember the whole story, but I remember he was involved. Didn't Mike know something about that?
Yeah, Mike brought that up. Mike and I do have a mutual friend named Hank Halstead.
Oh yeah, I know Hank.
Yeah, he's the the chief at Lathrop and
Northrop and Johnson.
Northrop and Johnson.
Yeah, he bought it in Newport.
Yeah, that's quite a high end.
Well, he always wanted to sell big boats.
Yeah, well, he is.
And he did.
He started the Bucket Regatta many, many years ago down in Antigua, which is big boats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so right up his alley. I have the very first call in from our very first Boat Talk in 2003. A listener called in, wanted to know about how to patch a canoe.
Okay.
So we could do that. And do you have any particular ones you want to hear?
I'll do the boat covering, the deck covering,
deck
because
covering?
My boat just got covered.
Okay.
My Clinton Beale.
That'll be number 7. And
Eric Dow covered my Clinton Beale boat, and he did it with Dynell.
Dinell, yes, we talked about that. That's what I...
And then he told me I needed the house in the top of the shelter done, too. So that might be, we doing that down at Jonesport next year.
But that's a long-lasting thing. I kind of favor Dinell myself, too.
Because it has because see, the problem was when they put the canvas down on my boat, they didn't do it with white lead.
Oh.
So it got underneath it, the water did, and it rotted.
Soaked through, yeah, yeah. All right, so let's go to Michael War here next.
Continuing on the same theme here.
Okay.
Firstly,
you trying to deck us?
I've been working on restoring, repairing, and owning wooden boats for about 30 years now, and
same one?
that's a sore subject. No, very many of them actually. I seriously doubt that he's got an oak deck. I can't ever recall I've ever seen a boat with an oak deck. I'd have someone else take a look at this material and see if it really is oak, number one. Number two, I'm definitely on the side of no plywood. I don't like plywood, don't trust plywood. Every time you penetrate plywood, every time you make a hole through it, you are potentially exposing, you know, those those end grain fibers to wood, to water. And once water migrates into those, it's very difficult for it to come out, being bound on either side by waterproof glue. I've covered several boat decks, including my own, which I did about 10 years ago, which is now a 70-year-old Alden Cutter. I use Zynel, which is the same product as Dinell. It's a polyester fabric you get from Defender Industries, and I've had absolutely no problems. I've covered teak decks with the stuff. I've covered pine decks with it. I've covered the bottom of a 17-foot barrel-back Chriscraft mahogany with it and had absolutely no problems. You will see a print through, which doesn't bother me at all. You quite often see that in a canvas-covered deck. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll actually see, depending on the ambient moisture in the air and how long your boat's been in the water and what the moisture is where the boat is, you know, the decks will still move around a little bit. But I've never seen a problem on any of the boats I've done, and I've stayed in contact with my customers. Another point, which I don't think you guys covered on this, is the issue when you do a Dinell or a Zynel deck, whether to some builders like to lay the stuff down, put down one layer, and leave, you know, squeegee it off and leave the weave as a non-skid, kind of like canvas. And I'm not a fan of that. I put down two layers and fill and fare with West 410 fairing compound, and then paint the deck and put a non-skid in it. Because main reason for that is that when you go to refinish your deck at a later date after you've painted it initially, you end up abrading the very surface that you have laid down on top of the deck to waterproof everything, which I think makes no sense whatsoever.
I agree with that completely.
So there's my take. I'm a definite no plywood guy, just because it's more money, it's more effort, and it raises all kinds. You know, you end up, it screws up your scuppers. If you have scuppers through your tow rails and or your bulwarks, you have to alter those. And as I said, I don't trust the material. And I know it can last a long time if it's well taken care of. And that, you know, there's the rub. Many owners are less than totally responsible about this whole matter. So in order to make the thing as idiot-proof as possible, I say leave it out. I've always guaranteed no failure on all the jobs I've done, and I've never seen one yet.
So there we go. That's the late, great Michael War, who had his own little funky boat shop down in Stonington. He'd been doing boat work for quite a long time, and I agree with him. I like Dinell myself, too. I think that's it looks a lot like canvas.
Oh, yeah. That's why I went with it.
Yeah.
And everybody I talked to, that's the way they wanted to go.
Yeah. And you just saturate it with epoxy, and
yep.
You're good to go for a very long time. It's always the edges that are a problem when you do something like that. But little care and you can make a very good new deck covering.
Yeah, I know Eric didn't take very long to do my deck because he was done in 2 weeks doing the whole project, and most of the project was working on just making sure the bottom was solid. You know, and he didn't do much, but he did a lot of fastening here and there. So, yeah. And he was up on it. So wasn't Richard Stanley. He liked it.
Yeah.
You know, I went through and asked a bunch of people who do wooden boats if that's what they do, and they all agreed.
Did you happen to see any of the fasteners that they pulled out from your boat?
No.
Interesting. I don't know if it always happens, but the one boat that I did help refasten a lot on, when you pull the screws out, if they came out fully intact, they were pretty much eaten away at the area between the backside of the plank and the rib, that little joint or seam, whatever you want to call it, I guess where most water gets in, and the screws were... some of them were totally missing there, and he ended up leaving the point in the thing. But yeah, I thought it was pretty interesting that they corroded in that way.
Mm. Yeah, corrosion's a big problem.
Yeah. Well, salt water, I don't know what you can do about it.
No, there's nothing you can do. You know, just use more similar metals than not.
Right, yes, that's very important.
And zinc's help, too.
Yeah. So call in, too. There's still 12 minutes left. You got time to call in if you'd like to. 207-618-8819 is the number into the studio. Or you can email at boattalk@gmail.com.
How about the boat salvage?
Boat salvage, that's a good one. Yep, that's my friend John Mayhew, who we used to work together at Bass Harbor Marine many years ago. He got a call to help a boat that was brand new, just built down in Rhode Island, and then the owner and two or three of his friends were sailing it up to Mount Desert to spend the summer up here. And what they did with their GPS is put in Mount Desert Rock as a waypoint in the fog.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ran right into it.
Well, it worked.
Yeah, you knew it worked pretty well. So it's a interesting story from John and his brother, too, who unfortunately is no longer with us also. But John, when he wasn't working at Bass Harbor Marine, was had a side job of rescuing boats. So
wow.
Let's go to a phone call before we get to boat salvage. Well, let's go to Greg down in Kentucky. Good morning. Good afternoon, Greg. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hello, all. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really enjoy Boat Talk. I listen in occasionally, but I do have even though I live in Kentucky, I've got a connection to Maine. I went to wooden boat school twice back in the early 80s. John Atkin and Giffy Full were my instructors, and I embarked on a 43-year career as a Marine surveyor. I just retired about a year and a half ago, and I'm embarking on a maritime adventure in the heartland that your readers may be interested in. It's called the Great American Loop. Have you ever heard of that?
Yep.
So about a year ago, my wife and I set out from Louisville, Kentucky in our trawler. We've got a main ship 34, and we are just starting on the loop, and we've cruised the Cumberland River and the Tennessee rivers in Kentucky, Alabama, and Tennessee. And eventually we'll head down to the Gulf and go around Florida and head up the East Coast to the Hudson River and then through the Erie Canal and explore Georgian Bay and the Great Lakes. And I just wanted to throw that out there because it may not have been heard of by many people on the coast of New England and Maine.
What are you doing it in?
Main ship 34 trawler, single diesel.
Yep. Trawlers, yeah. That's a very common there.
But
As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking with a fellow next month. He and his partner, I'm not sure if they're married or not, but they did the Great Loop right at the beginning of COVID season, which is the Great Loop is, well, it depends. It's a loop, but if you start in New York, it goes up. Yeah, up the Mohawk or through the Great Lakes to Chicago, down the canal into the Mississippi, and then another canal along the coast of Alabama.
Yeah, it's called the Tennessee Tom Bigby Waterway. It goes from the Tennessee River south to Mobile.
Yep, and then over to Florida and up the waterway on the East Coast back to New York. It's called the Loop.
Yeah, it's about a 6,000-mile trip.
So you're going to miss us up here in Maine?
No, I'm considered summer folk. I've got a place on Deer Isle.
Okay.
And that's why I'm so aware of WERU. I've been a subscriber, a member for years.
Yeah.
And I listen to it a lot in Kentucky, let me tell you. WERU is a breath of fresh air.
So how hot is it there right now?
Oh, high 80s.
Ooh. No.
Yeah, it's getting close to 90.
Yeah. Whoa. Well, come on up. We'll take care of you.
I'll be there in August.
Yeah. All right.
No, thanks for calling.
Take care, everybody. Enjoy this. Bye-bye.
Okay, back to sailboat salvage. I think we don't have quite enough time to squeeze that in. It's a 10-minute thing, and we only have 7 minutes left.
What do we have for short? How about that 233 one?
Michael War again. Patching a canoe.
Yep, go ahead.
Okay, number 10, patching a canoe. This is the very first call to Boat Talk back 2003 in May. The first person to call in with their boating question. Welcome to Boat Talk.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Fine, thank you.
Oh, well, I was sitting here wallpapering, and I was listening to you.
You're wallpapering your boat?
No, but that probably wouldn't work, though. But no, I'm wallpapering a bathroom.
Well, it's close to the water.
Yeah. Listen, my boat is not a big boat. It's a canoe. And okay. I don't know if you know anything about that kind of thing.
Yeah, they got both ends. They can go backwards and forwards as easily.
Well, mine's got holes in it. It's an old canoe that I got from an old outfitter.
A wooden one?
No, it's not. It's an old town. It's a composite, I guess. It's not fiberglass, whatever that type of...
it could be several things.
Now, what's on it now is it's been patched. It was run by an outfitter down a creek and they use it on shallow bottoms, and so it was dragged a lot. So the bottom is scraped up real bad throughout the years. And what they would do is they would just slap fiberglass patch over top of it. So it's got a whole bunch of fiberglass patches on them, with rosin and fiberglass paper or whatever that is.
Yeah, it's called mat or fiberglass cloth.
Right, it's like a cloth, piece of cloth. And what's happened is a lot of that is started to that hasn't really delaminated. Some of the bottom of the boat itself has started to delaminate, and I've just got a lot of things that sort of need to be repatched again. And I'm just wondering whether I can just, slap that stuff on again. Do I need to really strip it all down? What do I need to do?
I would guess that what you have on the bottom of your canoe is fiberglass patches, which is to say that not only the material is fiberglass, the cloth, but so is the resin, polyester fiberglass resin.
Okay.
Polyester fiberglass resin is really good for building stuff out of itself, but it is not a good glue, and it doesn't stick to old fiberglass very good. When you have new fiberglass and you mix it up in a cup and it kicks over into a solid, all those molecules of what they call cross-linked.
Right.
And they're primarily bonded together. If you poured more resin into the top of that cup and asked it to stick to it, those molecules aren't going to link together. They're just going to sit on each other, sort of more like glue, that secondary bonding. Fiberglass is a terrible glue.
Okay.
Doesn't stick to wood very good. It doesn't stick to old fiberglass. Epoxy, on the other hand, is much better.
As a
glue and as a resin to hold the cloth. It's also more flexible. To put new epoxy over the old cloth, if you have a loose edge, it's not gonna stick itself back down. It has to be basically abraded away, chiseled or sanded off.
Like a grinder or something?
Yeah. Almost as much fun as insulating the house, grinding fiberglass. I just done both this week, so I'd say.
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of epoxy. You don't have to grind as much as you do when you're using polyester. But when you do the epoxy patch, you need to use, or you should use, a material called boat cloth rather than the fiberglass cloth.
Okay.
Epoxy will work better with the materials called boat cloth.
Okay.
You can get that in most any marine supply store.
Okay.
So, there we go. That was the very first boat question where Mike and I asked as we knew what we were talking about.
Yeah, you did. Sounded good.
Yeah. So, it's about time to wrap up boat talk for this week. Thanks for the people who called in and had some questions. Thank to John Johansson for the Boatyard Report. And I'll throw a quick hello out to a friend of mine, Jeff Woodbury, who's listening online. Sailing a 38-foot scows on lake in Minnesota.
We reach out way beyond our borders, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Thanks to Pepin down in the engine room. I survived the sailor, I survived the catch the fish and take some home to Lizer.